Well, the unknown Jim Woman Bay is about halfway down the narrow lines. We learned yesterday the beginning of a piece of Agadta, where we had a number of drushes about the appropriateness, how you have the same word or the same adjective can be applied over and over to a major event in Jewish history. For example, we had Yoveh Adir, Hashem was called Adir Bamorim Hashem, should punish on behalf of the Adirim, meaning the Jewish people, the Adir Kofet Sibon, should punish the Adirim and the Tzriim, Tzorol Tzayfaz, Mayim Adirim, Adirim is mighty, strong, or devoted, or about Shaul also points out, it can have a meaning of Chochmah, using Adirim, which the water, I don't know if that necessarily has meaning permanent, water is not permanent, for example, and the Tzriim aren't permanent, but whatever, with using Adirim, using water. And we had several Jerushas in the same vein, another one using the word Yedid, which means beloved, another one with Toiv, and another one with Zeh and Zot. Okay, in that connection, in the one with Yedid, we said that the Yedid, which is Shlomo, is called Yedidya, it's appropriate that he's the one who should build the Yedid, meaning the Beis Mikdash, Ma Yedidis Mishkan Esefa, for the Yedid, meaning Hashem. Ma Yedidis Mishkan Esefa means how beloved are your dwelling place, Hashem. The Yedid means beloved. Yeah. Li Yedid, for Hashem, who is, Yavi Yedid, Ben Yedid, the descendant of the Yedid, which is Abraham, Mel Yedidi Bibesi, which now we're going to, the part of the Gemara that we're going to start with now, is going to douse in that topic regarding Abraham. So Shlomo, who is the descendant of Abraham, should build the Yedid, the Beis Mikdash, on behalf of the Yedid, meaning Hashem, the Chelkesh Yedid, and the portion of the Yedid, Binyamin, we said yesterday's Lenin, Yedid Hashem Yishkoma Betachala, that the Jewish people, the Yedidim, should have their kapara in there. And now we're going to focus this that we said before, Ben Yedid Zeh Avraham, because the pasuk says, Mer Yedid Yedidasi, now the Gemara is going to douse in that pasuk. So you actually have two back-to-back sukkim in Yirmiyah that the Gemara is going to douse in over here. The pasuk starts like this. Mel Yedidi Bebeisi, Hashem says, what is my beloved Mer is the way it says in the pasuk. Mer is the equivalent of Ma'am. What is what? So Mel Yedidi Bebeisi, what is my beloved one doing in my house? Meaning the Beis Mikdash. Asoista Hamzimasta Harabim, when she, meaning the Jewish people, have done great Averis deliberately, of Sarkodesh Yavro Me'alayich, and the holy flesh has been removed from you. When you do evil, then you're happy. That's one pasuk. The simple meaning of the pasuk Tosfos mentions is that Yirmiyahu is coming to the Beis Mikdash to daven for the Jewish people, that Hashem should spare them, and Hashem is telling them, don't bother. Tefillah is not going to help at this point. At this point, what they need is tshuva, and at this point, they seem to be past. They seem to be beyond that. They're not going to do tshuva so soon. Then the next pasuk continues. On the simple sense of Hashem telling Yirmiyahu, the Gemara is going to douse in a different. Then the next pasuk continues. Zayis Ranan, a leafy olive tree, Yifei Pri Toyar, a tree that has beautiful fruit, a fruit of beautiful appearance. Kara Hashem Shmeich, Hashem has called your name, meaning Hashem has called the Jewish people. They're like a leafy, beautiful olive tree. L'kol Hamulah Gdola, however, because of the noise of a great tumult, Hittis Eish Aleha, he ignited a fire on it, Viro Dol Yosef, and its branches are going to be broken. So the Gemara is now going to darshan these two psukim. So Amr Abin Chak, B'shar Shechara Beit Mikdash, when the Beit Mikdash was destroyed, Mosei HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Avraham, Shoy Omer Beit Mikdash. Hashem finds Avraham standing there in the Beit Mikdash to daven on behalf of the Jewish people. Amr Loi. No, it means Avraham. No, well, the Shama of Avraham, whatever it is. Amar lo, Hashem says to him, Mel Yedidi Bebeisi, what is my beloved one doing in my house?
Well, the
Pashas doesn't mean Abraham came back and said, amazing, but whatever, the point is that Abraham, that Abraham is there. So Hashem says, what is my beloved one doing in my house? We said before that Yedid means Abraham. So Hashem is saying, like, what are you doing over here?
He can go out of the Mar Machpelah, you know,
I don't know, maybe. Okay, anyway. So Mel Yedidi Bebeisi, Amar lo, so Abraham says, Al Iske Bonai Bosi, I came because of what's going on with my children, to daven on their behalf, and to ask you to go easy on them. Amar lo, Hashem says, the problem is, Bonecha Chatu V'Golu, your children have done Averis, and so they went into Golus. Among the many explanations on this, then Yoyodah says,
but they destroyed
No. So 1 second. So actually, Ben Yehoyada says part of it is Avraham is complaining. If the whole purpose of destroying the Beit Mikdash is that Hashem doesn't have to destroy the Jewish people instead, then how come so many Jews have been killed? And if Jews are being killed, then why is the Beit Mikdash being destroyed? Like, why is it both?
Oh.
And Hashem tells him because their averus have been so serious that they need both. They needed the korban and they needed the galus. And many of them had to be killed in the process in order that's how deep it went. Amaloi, Abraham says to Hashem, Shem b'shoigig chadu, maybe their averus were all b'shoigig, unknowingly. Amaloi, Hashem says no, continuing with the pasuk, asoisa hamazimasa, they did it knowingly. Hamazimasa means b'mezid. B'mezid means they, well, it's not the same shurish. The shurish is zima, which means knowingly. It means like Zima means like Rashi explains it in various places. It means like thought. It means like intention. Yeah. Anyway, Amaloi, so Avraham continues. Shem mi'utan chadu. That's what Zima means. It means like thought, intent. Yeah. In Rashi explains in some places it means like plotting. Maybe would be a good word for it. Sometimes it means so it can mean for good. It can mean for bad. It can mean like plotting to do like negative. It doesn't always have to mean though. Sometimes it's used in Tanakh in a good sense. All right. Anyway. Amaloi says, Avraham continues, Shema mi'utan chatu. Okay, but who says it was most of the Jewish people? Was it maybe only a minority of the Jewish people? Amaloi, no. I saw a fascinating thing, actually, from the Pnei Menachem, one of the Gerer Rebbeim, said, so how come by Sdoim 10 people was enough to save? And here Avraham is asking, maybe it's only a minority, and Hashem says it's a majority. Okay, but you should still say there's at least a million that didn't. The answer is, one answer is Jewish people are held to a higher standard. So Sdoim, yeah, they're goyim anyway, fine. 10 of them are at least not as bad as the others, and that's enough to save the city from destruction. Jewish people, you need more than that. This is true. Anyway, Omomoy, Hashem says no, Harabi. The many, meaning it was a majority of the people were acting this way. So Abraham says, at least you should have remembered on their behalf, Brismila, and that should be as close for them. Amalai Hashem says, even that's more. The holy flesh, meaning Brismila, has been taken away from you. In other words, they're not observing Brismila even anymore. They don't have that. Apparently, there were some
people.
In every generation, obviously, there were some people, but apparently there were enough people in that generation who weren't even observing that. Besides which, by the way, you have a Gemara in Eruvin that says that Avraham Avinu stands by the door of Gehenim and won't allow any Yid to go in there because he has a Bris Mila. However, if that Yid has had relations with Goyis, then so to speak, like his foreskin regrows and Avraham doesn't recognize him as being a Malus, and therefore he can pass. So maybe that was the verse over here also. Maybe they had a Bris Mila when they were 8 days old, but afterwards. Anyway, I don't know, whatever. So Hashem continues in the pasuk over there, even that, they don't even have that quote. And Marshall adds, Yavru me'alayich, also means when we me'alayich, who's the you, if we're talking to Avraham Avinu, it means, so to speak, Avraham, you have even lost the chos of Brit Mila because your children aren't observing it properly.
Okay.
No, obviously Avraham is still a tzaddik, but in other words, you can't intercede with them because of that mitzvah, because it's been abrogated so much. Amaloi, so Avraham continues, Shema yimim tanta lahem hayukhozim b'tshuva. Okay, but Hashem, maybe if you'd given them more of a chance, they would have done tshuva. Especially Marshal's yimim tanta lahem, if you had waited for them. Yimim tanta, maloshim hamten, yeah. In fact, Marshal points out, you have a Gemara in Gittin that mentions that Hashem grew up the korban 2 years earlier than it was supposed to happen.
So
maybe you could have waited for them a little longer. Amaloi, Hashem continues with the last part of the passage. No, that wouldn't have worked. Kira Osechi, Oz Taloisi. When they're doing evil, then they're happy about it. So therefore, like this, if they had 2 more years of happiness, or however longer, they would have continued doing Avir.
It would get worse, even.
Kira Osechi, you're evil, Oz Taloisi, that's when you're happy. Ben Yoyota, by the way, says a murder-dicker thing on it. He says, now you have, for example, you have Gemara that mention there's different strategies that a person can use if their Yeshahara is about to overpower them. The ultimate one, the Gemara mentions in Brachas, the person to remember Yom HaMisa, that eventually the person should realize after 120, I'm going to die, I'm going to stand in front of the base and tell my law, better behave myself. In that generation, they were taking it to the opposite, say, well, we're going to die anyway. Off of a shot, they came up on numbers, and we may drink, because eventually we're going to die anyway. So like the very thing that should be used to help them think thoughts of Tshuva is instead making it worse. Hashem says, therefore, it's not going to work, so therefore I have no choice but to do this. Miyad himiach yodav al roshay. So immediately Abraham put his hands on his head. He's screaming and crying. V'amalayin, he says to Hashem, Shema chas v'shalom, ein lam takana. So are you saying, Hashem chas v'shalom, that there's no hope for them, there's no way to fix themselves up? What do we do now?
That's what the Jewish people should have said when they passed away.
Well, this is also true, yeah. Yos the Baskel v'amalayin, so the Baskel comes out and answers Avraham with the words of the next passage. Zai, which we said before, Zai Yisran, and you say, Pritoya, Kara Hashem Shmech, Hashem has called your name, the Jewish people, like a leafy olive tree that produces beautiful fruit, which means the Jewish people are compared to an olive tree. In what sense? Ma Zai Yisru Achrisa Yisrael, right? Just like when it comes to an olive tree, its future, its destiny is at its end. What does that mean? Rashi mentions two explanations. One is that it means you plant an olive tree and it takes a long time to produce fruit. The other explanation, Rashi says, is because many other trees, different fruits on the tree ripen at different times. As opposed to olives, they tend to all ripen around the same time. So like only at the end of the growing season do you all of a sudden have a crop of olives. And there's other explanations as well, including Zayisram, the leafy olive tree.
What
does it mean? The word tree on olive tree that has a lot of leaves. And we're going to explain to them why the importance of that. Anyway, the point is...
So Ranana means the leafy place?
Yeah, I guess so. So Mazayis Durach Risa the Sofer, so just like an olive tree, its destiny is at its end, again meaning either that it takes a long time to produce fruit, but eventually you have a crop of fruit, or at the end of the growing season, all of a sudden you have the whole crop. Or another explanation I think Daniel Yoda says is olives, I mean you can eat them, but that's not the main purpose that people grow olives for. The main purpose is to make olive oil out of them.
So meaning you should have waited.
Therefore, Hashem says to Avraham, right now, they're not where they should be. Therefore, I have to send them into Golos and destroy the business. But they do eventually have a future. They do eventually have a destiny. They will accomplish what they're supposed to. Just like an olive tree, again, in Rashi's first explanation. You plant it, you're waiting a year, 2 years, 3 years, and nothing, but eventually you get a crop out of it. And then you keep getting crops out of it. The same way Hashem is telling Avraham, yes, now things are really bad. But don't think that means that's over, the game over for the Jewish people. They still have a future. Then the prophet continues. So that's Hashem reassuring Avraham. Reassuring Avraham that after all, as bad as it is now, even though they've fallen to this low ebb.
Said, why didn't you wait? And Hashem seems to confirm that.
No, because Hashem is saying, I couldn't wait in the short term. We have to wait in the long term. Now that you mentioned that, so Marsha says another point of the analogy with olives, Marsha says, is, again, with the analogy that olives, you have to crush them in order to get oil. You have a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which we learned from Perek Chelet, that discusses the question, what happens if the Jewish people don't do tshuva? Will Moshiach Chas V'Shalom not come?
Well,
so we had a machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. We had to ask Rabbi Eliezer saying that if the Jewish people do tshuva, nigolin, and if not, ain nigolin. And Rabbi Yeshua says to him over there, no, if the Jewish people choose not to do tshuva, eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mamad Lahan Melech Kasha to Haman, they just will arrange, there'll be a harsh king like Haman or Hitler or whoever, and he will force it that the Jewish people are going to do tshuva. So therefore, according to that, Marsha says, that's the vote over here also. Hashem is saying to Abraham, it turns out, unfortunately, the Jewish people are not doing tshuva the easy way, therefore the only way is to treat them like an olive and crush it, but eventually you get olive oil, eventually you get bright olive oil out of it. Let's do it the easy, exactly. All right, let's continue. The pasuk continues, that same pasuk continues with Kol Hamula Gdola, with the noise of a great tumult, Hitzit Eish Aleha, Hashem ignited a fire on the Jewish people, V'ro Dolo Yosef, and it broke his branches. So what does that mean? Amar Abchinna Bapapa, it means you have to go back in history to see where all this started, this whole thing, this whole downward spiral that led to the Golos. Because of the sound, because of the words, Hamula, Meloshin Mila, of the Meraglim, Nisroyu Dolly Yisei and Sharitrael, that broke the branches, meaning the strength of the Jewish people. And the Mila, not Mila as in British Mila, Mila as in their words.
Milim,
right. The Amr of Chinna Bapapa, because we also see the same of Chinna Bapapa said, Dover Godel Dibru Meraglim Ba'utashah. The Meraglim said a terrible thing at that time when they came back from those 40 days in Eretz Yisrael, and 10 of the Meraglim said a bad report about Eretz Yisrael. They didn't just say Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. As Marsha said, that wouldn't have been enough to cause such a long-lasting effect. But they said, Ki Chazak Hu Mimenu. They said the nations of Eretz Yisrael are mightier than Mimenu. One second. Al-Tikri means, now the simple meaning of Mimenu means then us. But Al-Tikri, Mimenu ela Mimenu. Not then us, but then him. kaviyachol shas pilo balabayis any yachol lahoitzi kela misham. So to speak, even the balabas, even Hashem, wouldn't be able to take out his utensils from there, because so to speak, they're too powerful for him. Okay, yeah, I mean, first of all, by the way, this alpiki mimenu ele mimenu, Rashi says in Sota, actually, one second, so actually, Rashi says in Sota, you shouldn't be girded. That. What do you mean alpiki mimenu ele mimenu? Either way, whether it means from us, or whether it means then us, or whether it means then him, it's pronounced the same way. So there's no alpiki over here. Alpiki is when you're changing the pronunciation. However, you have Rishonim who bring that there was a different Mesota from B'nai Babel that actually did pronounce the words a little bit differently, so the Gemara could be going according to that. The Balei Torah actually on the pasuk says a very interesting thing. He says each of the letters, the Mimenu, has the name of the letter itself. It's a double letter. Mem is Mem Mem. Nun is Nun Vav Nun. Vav is Vav Vav. So therefore, like the word Mimenu itself, so to speak, has a double meaning in it. It means, on the simple meaning, they're saying the nations of Eretz Yisrael are stronger than us, but they also mean the meaning that they're stronger than Hashem.
Because what? Mem, mem?
Because mem, mem, so like the first mem, mem, nun, nun, and yeah, so like each letter in it is double. Each letter has like a double angle on it. Yeah.
Double meaning,
yeah. Anyway, they're saying that the nations of Eretz Yisrael are stronger than Hashem. Now, okay, you have some of them approaching blunt the force of it. They say all they mean, that what the Meraglim mean by that is, like, so to speak, Hashem has to take us out of Mitzrayim, Yod Chazakah of Israel and Asuriah. Do we really have enough Kutim that Hashem is going to show the same Yod Chazakah of Israel and Asuriah against the Canaan? Others take it more bluntly. Rav Moshe Feinstein actually has in one of his children talks about, you see from this, that the Meraglim were Koshet Koy from Be'ikr. They denied the power of Hashem. And yet we see that we learn the size of a minion from the word Eder in connection with them. So Rav Moshe uses this in a Tshuva to say this bears on the question of whether you can include Machal or Shabbos,
right,
and other six people in a minion. Anyway, the point is, Rav Chinen of Apapa is saying the Meraglim said a terrible thing, and because of that began the process of breaking the Jewish people, which eventually led to the Churban. Because the Meraglim didn't just say Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, they actually said that Hashem doesn't have the power. Yeah. Mask is for Rav Chinen, however, Rav Chinen asks, and in that case, that doesn't fit with the words of Sukkim. Hai l'kol hamula g'doyla, then why are you using the word hamula in the Pasuk, which means like a tumult? Then it should say, because of the sound of the great words, of the terrible words, why use the word hamula? No. Rather, Rav Chinina says there's a different meaning of the word hamula. Like we said before on Amud Aleph, many times in chats we have, the Gemara will darshan a hey and a ches as being interchangeable. So therefore, it continues with Hashem's conversation with Avram Avinu, Amalaya Kadosh Baruch Hu Avram. Okay, I've heard your voice, I'm listening to what you're saying, and therefore I'm having rachmanas on the Jewish people. Chamula, which I should like chamula. Lekoil, because of the sound of Avraham Avinu's crying, chamula gdola, Hashem says, I will have great pity on them. What is that? I originally said that the Jewish people are going to have to be subjugated by four different kingdoms, Babel, Paras, Madai, Yavan, and Edom. I said that each one is going to have to be Kol Achas V'Achas Kashir Al Malchi, and each one is going to have to last as long as all four of them put together. In other words, let's consider, for example, Golus Babel was 70 years. Golus Paras, Madai was 52 years. Golus Yavan is 180 years. So far that comes out to around 300 years. Golus Edom so far is in 70, 52, and 180. So around 300, give or take.
180?
And 180. So around 300. Then you have Golus Edom, which so far has been 1900 plus years. Hashem is saying, originally, my original plan is that Golus Babel is going to have to last 2200 years, and Golus Paras of Madai is going to have to last 2200 years, etc. Hashta, because you cried out to me, so I'll have Rachmanos, Kol Choda V'Choda, my depositor. Then I'll go back to the original plan. There will be four Malchias, but each one will only have its own designated time, 70 for Bavel, and so forth. The Ikadamri, another version of what Hashem says to Abraham, Aniyah Mauti Bazeh, my original plan was that the Jewish people are going to have to be in one Golus and only then under one power and only then under another one, which means, first of all, it means like the one before. It means that the one is going to last a long time. But second of all, it also means that Marshal says, it means that, for example, during Golus Babel, all the Jewish people are going to be under the power of Babel. During Golus Paras Madai, all the Jewish people are going to be under their power, etc. Asha Bavataka. Now, instead, because of your tefillahs, I changed it, and I'll make it that it's all together. meaning. In other words, Rashi says, like this, what it means is, for example, in other words, Golus Bavel, for example, you had 70 years of Golus Bavel when Bavel was a world power. After that, Bavel's power was broken. But nevertheless, you still have Jews continuing to live under Bavel, even during the next empire of Paras HaMonis. And so forth. So, yeah, and Marsha spelled that out. So that, like this, you have them sort of like this, yeah, they're the same time, at the same time, you have different Goliaths. No, but Marsha says actually it's better, because if all the Gemara tells us it's talking, if all the Jewish people are under one kingdom, then if that kingdom decides to wipe out the Jewish people, Chas v'Shalom, what happens?
And what about if the four kingdoms decide to wipe out?
No, but the point is, like this, you never have, you're not going to have four different ones that all manage to coordinate things at one time. You have Gemara in Tzachim, actually, where a Roman emperor, I think it is, or whatever, some prominent Roman, says to one of the Amoraim, the Parshi, I think, he says, look how nice we are to you, that you've been living under us for a couple hundred years, and we haven't wiped you out. Kitzur, the Gemara says, the answer is, it's not because you didn't want to, it's because you know you're not going to be able to wipe out the whole Jewish people anyway. They don't all live in the Roman Empire. Some of them live in the Persian Empire, some of them live in the other places. And the guy swears an oath by his God or whatever that you're right, it bothers us all the time, and So therefore, so that's what Marshall says, that's the point of our Gemara over here. Like this, you have, even after Babel's power is broken, you still have Jews living under Babel. Even after Paras HaMadai's power is broken, you still have people living there when you have the next empire ruling. And therefore, like, first of all, it means that everything is running concurrently. So therefore, shortened. Everybody's not under Edom. The Kedush not. First of all, you have many people in Yishmael. And second of all, you have, I mean, the question is, what exactly counts as Edom? What exactly counts as Edom? I mean, is it? Okay, so he says, no, not all the Jewish people
America,
are in the Western countries.
America is from the Native Americans.
No, but come on, America is, a lot of America's institutions are modeled on those of Greece and Rome, so arguably America is also a continuation of Edom, but whatever, the point is not the whole Jewish people are under the rule of America or this or that. Whatever, the point is you have. The point is that's not the whole Jewish people are not under. And besides, you have, okay, look, you also have half the Jews, you also have nearly half the Jews of the world now are in Israel, which is a sovereign country, you know, so you have that also. Whatever, the point is, that's it. Okay. Almost. Not quite.
We have so many Jews in Israel.
Okay, look. Let's go on. Amar Rabbi Shurban. Amar Rabbi Shurban, maybe. Lama Nimshal Yisrael Lazarus. Why are the Jewish people compared to an olive tree? Loimaloch, to tell you, Ma Zayit ain't olive nursery in Loga Mesachama, but Loga Mesachamim. Just like an olive tree is evergreen, its leaves never fall off in the summer or the winter. Af Yisrael, Ein Lahem Teilai Lom. It's the same thing. The Jewish people will never go away, will never disappear. Loiba Olam Azev, Loiba Olam Abba, not in this world, not in the next world. Marsha spells out the idea, the point of the leaves. We're going to learn in Kulin, when we get there, Bez Hashem, in a few months from now, that the leaves of a tree represent the Amei Oret. But the fruit represents the Talmud HaChamim, flowers, they represent the Talmidim, whatever. The leaves, which in the face of it, they don't do much. On the other hand, they protect the fruit. They represent the Amei Oret. The point is, even the leaves of this olive tree representing the Jewish people are important and never disappear. They're an integral part of the Jewish people as well.
Nursery,
they fall off. Yeah. But they don't fall off. Yeah. The Amr of Yechanan, also of Yechanan, says, Loma Nimshal Yisrael Lazayit, why are the Jewish people compared, what's another reason the Jewish people are compared to an olive tree? Yeah, so there's evergreen. Loma Loch, to tell you, Ma Zayit Eni Moti Shamne Eli Dexisa, the same way as an olive tree produces its oil only when the olives are crushed. Af Yisrael Ein Chorzen L'Mutter V'Elai De Yisrin, the same way the Jewish people, unfortunately, far too often only return to good through Yisrin, like Marsha was saying before, Ma'am and Melech Koshek Ha'aman, if necessary. There is, by the way, the Rebbe Rashab, the Rebbe quotes a number of times in Sichas, usually in connection with Yotav Kislev, that the Rebbe Rashab used to say that this Gemara also refers to what happened with the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe was arrested, which actually is in Yom Adiyom. The Alter Rebbe was arrested right after Sukkot and spent 53 days in jail, as we know. And after that, the result of that is he comes out and he's teaching more chassidus than ever before. That's like the crushing of the olive, which produces then all this oil that brings about a tremendous light. The Rebbe, in fact, once commented about it in a sikha that you have. You, during the time when the olive is crushed, you're neither here nor there. You don't have the olive's not edible, and you don't have the oil yet. But eventually, the process continues, and you get the oil. The same way, the 53 days that the Alter Rebbe is in jail was like a period when the olive itself is being crushed. You don't know what's going to be the end of it. But eventually, there comes out that bright oil that illuminates the world.
So what would have happened if Napoleon had won the war against Russia?
According to what the Alter Rebbe was writing in his letter over there, I mean, the Jewish people would have been, unfortunately, distanced from Hashem. They would have succumbed to ideas that, yeah, they would have succumbed to ideas of enlightenment and whatever, they would have become reformed Jews, just like the Jews of just like many of the Jews of Germany and then France and what have you. Yeah. Alright, let's go on. We had in the Mishnah Machlokas, when we have two things, two types of menachos, or grain offerings in the Beis Mikdash at any rate, that have to be chametz. We have 10 of the loaves that come together with the Torah, and we have the Shea Lechem on Shavuot. We had a Machlokas in the Mishnah, how exactly do you go about making them chametz? We had Reb Meir saying, what you do is like this. You measure out the flour, an exactly foreign. Then you take a small amount of that flour, you mix it with water, leave it to ferment, to become fermented dough, to become sourdough, so or it's called. Then you take that lump and put it back into the rest of the mixture and mix it together so that it'll make the rest of the chametz.
You take a handful of flour, you put water in it.
You put water in it, you wait till it becomes chametz, and then you put it into the...
When you know when it all cracks?
Yeah, when you have cracks in it, whatever, yeah.
Or tails.
Yeah, whatever, no, that would be sealed. Okay. Reb Yehuda objected. Okay, then we have like this. We have, so that was Reb Meir had said that in the Mishnah, which Reb Yehuda had said, that's not the best way of doing it, because the way to make something chametz is you need real sourdough, not just a piece of dough that's been fermenting for a short amount of time. You need it to have been fermenting for a few days or weeks or whatever it is. So how should you do it, rather? Reb Meir says, you take a different lump of dough, you put it into which is properly chametz, which is proper sourdough. You put it into the container, and then you fill up the rest of the container until it reaches the isorin mark. And then Reb Meir objects in the Mishnah. The problem with that is, depending on the consistency of that original lump, you're going to end up with either more or less of an isorin of flour, because depending on how the consistency of it is in water. He said you're going to have chaseira or yaseira. So the Gemara says, my chaseira or yaseira. What do you mean it's going to be too little or too much? It means like this. It means if that particular lump of sourdough that you put in there, according to Reb Yehuda, is thick, in other words, it was mixed with very little water, then it means that lump takes up less volume than the loose grains of flour would, therefore you wind up with more flour in the isarin than you're supposed to. Raka, and on the other hand, if it was mixed with a lot of water and it's soft, nimtis chasera, then you're going to wind up with too little flour in the isarin. So the Reb Meir is saying, that's the problem, therefore you can't do it your way, Reb Yehuda. Even though it's true that would make a superior loaf of bread, but you can't do that because a minch has to be an exact size. It means too little. It means too little. You said it means too much. Too little flour altogether. In other words, if you were to figure out, if you have a lump of sourdough made according to Reb Yehuda's method, but it was made, let's say, with very little water, it means that the grains of it are more compacted together than it would be if it hadn't been mixed with water, where then it would take up more space. Now you're putting it in, you're filling up till the isarin level, but ultimately you have more grains of flour in there than if you had put in all plain flour in the first place, without mixing any of it with water. That's why Reb Meir says my way is better. The Gemara says, what's the problem? So what's the problem? Ultimately, you're measuring to the isarin level. So what's the problem? Whether there's a few grains too little or too much? The answer is, Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. The Amitavai, Rabba and Rabbi Yosef both say, the problem is, because we have to, according to the mayor, we have to figure out the volume of the isarin based on the original volume of the grains of flour. In other words, that's the point. The mayor is saying, even though now, right now, it looks like it exactly reaches the starting level in the container, no more, no less. But the fact is, you have a few too little or a few too many grains of flour in there because of the way it was mixed with the water, and therefore no good. So therefore, that's why the mayor is saying you have a problem.
It's always the yisera or...
Well, because inevitably you're going to have, unless you mix it in exact proportion, then it's not going to be. It's not going to take up the exact volume that unmixed flour would take up. Okay, so the question is, according to the mayor, the lishko purtamine, so why don't we do this, measure out the flour of the isarin, then take a little bit of it out, the licham sein avroi, make it chomis outside the isarin measure, the leisiv and iloshabade, and then take it and knead it together with the rest of the flour. If you say the problem is that that according to the mayor, you're ending up with too little or too much flour in the end, then fine, measure it out first. Then measure out the exact isarin first. So what you should do is rather like this. You bring sa'ur from your house. It's fine. And let's say that sa'ur, okay, sometimes it's going to be thicker, sometimes it's going to be thinner, depending on how it was mixed with the water. Then what you do is you put it into the Issarin measure, and then you take a look at the sourdough. Then you take a look at the, then you take a look at the consistency of it. If you see it too thick, then you realize, okay, well, in that case, if I measure exactly to the Issarin level, I'm gonna have too little, so therefore I'll add a little extra flour to compensate, and vice versa. So why don't you do that? The question is, that was actually the second explanation. Let's start with the first explanation. According to the mayor, that was saying you have to take out some of the original flour that you measured, and according to the Yehuda, who says that you take a separate lump of sourdough, where either of those ways have problems. Why don't you do like this? Rashi says, first explanation. After you measure out the Issarin, allow some of it to become chametz, put in a hot place so it'll become chametz faster, or put it, or combine it with another dough that's already chametz so that it'll become properly chametz, then go and mix it with the rest. That's Rashi's first explanation. Then Rashi's second explanation is that you look at the consistency of the lump that you took, and then based on that, you figure out how to compensate in the container.
If it's too consistent,
if it's too loose, then you're gonna add extra flour. If it's too more, if it's too tight, then you're gonna add less flour. Whatever. The point is, you can do it that way. The answer is, gzera duma ofili isuri ma'alma. The answer is true, fine, but we make gzera. We're not going to allow that because we're concerned then that somebody may just bring sa'ur from a completely different place. In other words, like this, Rashi's first explanation, if somebody sees that you're bringing a lump of dough and putting it in and mixing it in with the rest and not measuring it again, they'll think that you're able to bring a mincha that consists of more of an Issarin. They're not going to realize that some of the flour came from the original Issarin. So we said that
in one case, the sourdough comes from the...
According to the mayor, it comes from within the container. You take some of it, you allow it to become chametz, then you mix it back in. According to the Yehuda, you take a separate lump. Right, but the point is, in other words, we're saying you don't want to take that lump. You don't want to take that lump and then measure and then put it back in without remeasuring, according to Rashi's first explanation, or measuring but then compensating more or less according to the consistency of it, because then people will not realize that you have to have exactly an Issarin flour. People are going to think. People in the first explanation are going to think that you can have a mincha that's more than an Issarin. They're going to think you started with an Issarin of flour, then you added a lump of dough, so now it's more than an Issarin. In the second explanation, the problem is that you might not get the consistency quite right. You might think that you're compensating for the consistency of it, and meanwhile you're actually not properly. You're measuring based on some other lump, and then that's
proper consistency.
Right, and then therefore you're going to end up with too much or too little. Okay. Anyway, according to the mayor, that is why you need to first measure the Issarin, then take a piece of it, allow it to become chametz, then put it back into the Issarin, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, what you need to do is you take a separate piece of dough, put it in, and then fill up the rest of it into an empty container. Then you pour the flour on top of it until you reach the Issarin. Right. Okay. So now we're going to talk more about how we go about making menachas chametz. And in general, this topic also is very negative to Hilchos Pesach, of course. Turn it on one. Ein machmitzin betapuchin. You're not allowed this shtei alechem and the bread of the Torah, which has to become chametz. You're not allowed to make it chametz using apples, like mashed up apples or apple juice. You actually have a major machlokes with Rishonim. Okay, so that's what we're going to be discussing now. So there is actually a major machlokes with Rishonim about: are we talking about plain apple juice, or are we talking about apple juice mixed with water? That's going to affect the meaning of our Gemara over here. So let's learn through the Gemara, and then we'll talk about what the practical things are that come out of it and how often.
Aaron.
Mishum Rav Chanina ben Gamliel Amru. On the other hand, they said in the name of Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, Machmitin. You can use apple juice or apple or mashed up apples. Well, so that's the thing. You have a machlokes Rishonim. Are we talking about mixed with water, or are we talking about plain? In other words, the Chachamim are saying you can't do that because that doesn't make it chametz. And according to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, it does. Rav Kahana masked by Rav Chanina ben Shadim. Rav Kahana learned that it wasn't Rav Chanina ben Gamliel who said that you can use apples. He learned that it was Rav Chanina ben Shadim said that. The Gemara continues, Kiman Ozla Hoditznan. Okay, which opinion is the author of the following Mishnah in Trumas? Tapuach Shiriskoi. If you took an apple of Truma and mashed it up, the Nosne Beseicha Issa, and then you put it into dough, the Chinta, and caused it to become, and you use that apple to make the dough chometz, and the dough is chulin. The question is the dough now considered Truma, and only Koyanim can eat it, or not?
If you take what?
If you take an apple of truma and mash it up and put it into a dough of chulin, and that improves the ability of the dough of chulin to become chulin, because now the to put it in modern terms, the yeast now have more sugar to feed off of.
Are you allowed to do that?
Well, that's the question. That's the question. Harezu Asura. The Mishnah says that dough is now also to zorin. Because of the apple and truma that was used in it. Kiman, so which opinion is that like? Lamer of Chaninim and Gamliel, he will learn. Apparently that is only like the Chaninim and Gamliel, who says that if you use apples or apple juice, then it makes 100% chometz. So therefore, in other words, here you have a dough where apples of truma were used to make it chometz, and such a thing is not bottle, so such a thing is not bottle because it's an important thing in the dough. So apparently the Chachamim would disagree with that, because they just said that you can't use apples to make the bread for a toy to chometz, implying that it doesn't really make a chometz.
So it doesn't really... It was truma.
We're talking about truma and chulin, but the question is, the Mishnah is saying over there, because you used apples of truma in a dough of chulin, and they created chimus, they made that dough ferment, and they made that dough rise, then therefore that makes it also tzarim. If we say that apple juice has the capability of doing that, which is what Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is saying, that makes sense why the dough is also tzarim, because you use something that's also tzarim, namely truma, to make it rise. But if you say, according to the Chachamim, that apple juice is not going to make dough rise anyway, it's not going to make a chometz, then what's the problem? It should be bottled like anything else.
So what would be the purpose if it doesn't make
it? Okay, the Chachamim would say, therefore, it's not also. So you thought you were going to make a chometz with that, but you didn't. The answer is, afilo tamer rabbanon, no, because you could even say that Mishnah goes according to the rabbanon, nehida chometz gomer lehavi. It is true that mashed up apples or apple juice is not going to make full-fledged chometz. Nuksha miyahavi. However, they will make a weak type of chometz. So now when it comes to the toida and the shtei alechem, they have to be full-fledged chometz. Therefore, no apples.
It's not really chometz.
It's like, so to speak, not real chometz. So now, I would say, so now we can talk about, there's a machlokas rishonim on the parameters of this. Do we mean that plain juice, apple, orange, any milk, any kind of non-water liquid, is not able to make something chometz on a deraisa level at all, only on a derabanan level, therefore it's no good for the toda and whatever, but it is also on Pesach, and therefore it would be also the derabanan in the case of the truma, the other possibility that we're showing him talk about is maybe what the machloikas is over here, maybe even Rav Chanina ben Gamliel would agree that pure apple juice is not going to be able to do that. The machloikas rather would be then about apple juice mixed with some water. Let's say some of the Rishonim learn this way, that pure apple juice, according to everybody, cannot make it real chometz. The most you can make it is chometz nuksha, and even Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is going to say that chometz nuksha you can't use for... Chometz nuksha means like a weak kind of chometz. So again, we have Rav Chanina ben Gamliel saying you can use apple juice to make the lachmei toda, to make them chometz. But one way of looking at it is that he's talking about plain apple juice, and he's saying that is capable of making a chometz, and the Chachamim are disagreeing with him, that the maximum it can be is chometz nuksha. Another way of looking at it is, if it was pure apple juice, even Rav Chanina ben Gamliel would agree that's no good. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel was talking about if you have apple juice mixed with some water, that will be able to make a chometz. And the Chachamim would be disagreeing and saying it makes a chometz mixture. So the result of that is, you have a machlokes rishonim, so therefore, the consensus in Shulchan Aruch is like the second way of learning it, that...
apple juice or cider?
It doesn't matter, apple juice, for our purpose, it doesn't matter. No, that's fine. Okay. The consensus in halacha of most... The consensus in halacha is like the second way of looking at it, that plain juice is not able to create chometz, at least not at deraisa level. So in principle, for example, you would be able to knead dough with juice and eat it on Pesach. You couldn't use it for matzah mitzvah, because that you have to make with water, but you would be able to eat it during Pesach. You can't have juice mixed with water, though, even a small amount of water, because not only it will become chometz, but it will become chometz even faster than plain water. You don't even have the 18 minutes that you usually would with plain water. you have a minority opinion that's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch that says that juice by itself will make a chametz, that the halacha is like the first understanding of Rachamim and Gamliel, that plain juice is capable of making chametz, and therefore it says in Shulchan Aruch you should be machmer on that and not need, and not need flour with juice to make cookies or cakes or whatever. That's the question. Can it become chametz or not? That's the whole question. Fear is the first stage of becoming chametz. So if it can make chametz, then it can make fear.
Assumingly.
Okay, but the point is, again, so you have these different opinions in halacha, so that's why. The generally accepted opinion in halacha is, in principle, you would be able to use fruit juice by itself. It wouldn't make chametz. However, you shouldn't, because water might get mixed into it, and then you would have chametz even faster. There is a minority opinion that's also ikir adin, because juice by itself will make chametz. So that all affects the
question. Really the halacha.
Well, so the basic halacha is that you would, in principle, be allowed to, but because of the concern of water being mixed in practice, you shouldn't. Plus, also, there's that other opinion.
Yeah,
okay. Onward.
What matzah ashira is with what?
Matzah ashira is if it's made with any liquid other than water.
So
then you're not allowed to use it for. You're not allowed to use it for.
Okay. I know you.
Okay, let's go on. Yes. There's no harder kind of mincha that there is to take knitza from it than a mincha chayte. Because at least a regular mincha is mixed with oil. And we said in the mission, it's kneaded with warm water, and it's mixed with oil. So it has a consistency. It has a dough. So therefore, it's not so hard to take knitza from it. A mincha chayte, which is just dry flour, is very hard to get an exact kohenet out of. On the other hand, Rabbi Yitzchak Barav Dini says no, because minchas chayte megabla b'mayim, you would be allowed to knead the flour of a minchas chayte with water, okshera, and it would still be kosher. The Torah says you're not allowed to have oil in it, but there's not a problem with having water in it. So the Gemara says, lema b'hokam mikvigi, should we say that their machloikas is, that the underlying machloikas between them is the point that we were just talking about before between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, about one says that we figure out the volume of the kohmets based on how it is now. So therefore, now you take a kohmets from that flour mixed with water, and whatever fits inside is handful. That is a valid kohmets, even though if it hadn't been mixed with water, there might be fewer or more grains of dough in it, of flour in it. We don't care about that. So therefore, he says, so therefore, Rabbi Yitzchak Barav Dini. Again, Rabbi Yitzchak Barav Dini, on the face of it, Rabbi Yitzchak Barav Dini is saying that you can mix it with water. And Rabbi Ila is saying you can't. On the face of it, the machloikas is, Rabbi Yitzchak would say like this. Let's say, for example, a particular kohenet of this flour, if you were to take it dry, let's say it would contain 10,000 grains of flour. Rabbi Yitzchak Barav Dini might take the view, doesn't matter. When you now take a kohenet when it's mixed with water, you might afterward go and break it down and count the individual grains, and you might find, let's say, only 9,000 grains, or you might find 11,000 grains. Doesn't matter. We go according to what it is right now. Right now it's mixed with water. Right now this is the volume that fits in his handful. Therefore you're good. Well, Mar Sava, whereas maybe Rav Ila holds the Kmoit Shahoyu Mashadin. We have to go according to the original volume. So therefore, he's going to say, once it's mixed with water, you're not going to be able to recreate the original volume. Therefore, you can't do it. You have to make sure in this scenario that your kohenet contains exactly 10,000 grains, no more, no less. If we understand the machlokes like that. The Gemara says, Loi, no, you don't have to understand it that way. We could say both Rav Ila and Rav Yitzchak Barav Dini hold, we go according to how it is now. The machlokes would be on the following point. The Mar Savar, that Rabbi Yitzchak Barav Dini would say, my chareva, when the Pasuk insists that the mincha has to be dry, what do you mean dry? It means only chareva mishemen. Only dry in the sense that most menachos contain oil, and this one doesn't. Well, marasovim, chareva mikol dover. The other one would hold, chareva means completely dry. No water, no oil, no nothing. So that would be the machlokes. So, chareva definitely means you can't have shemen in it. And if you put shemen in it, in fact, the person puts shemen in a mincha chote, you get malt. And the men, it's dry, as in there's no oil in it. So the pasuk says, there's pasuk oil, and it's not oil, but it could have water. The other one holds, can't have any liquid.
Huh.
Okay. Okay, so now we're going to talk more about this machloket. Now we're going to talk more about this issue of the kamos shehoyu and kamos shehein. When it comes to volumes of things in halacha, do we go according to the original volume, or do we go according to the volume as it is at present? Three more circles. Tanan Hatham, we learn in a Mishnah in Uktzin, which is a Masechta that talks about the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara of food. The nominally Masechta Uktzin, Uktzin means stems. So nominally it talks about the dinim of Tumah, of stems and leaves and whatever of food. We'll learn a lot about it in Chulin Bez Hashem. We'll have a perek that's sort of like a Gemara on that Uktzin. But yeah, anyway. So the Mishnah says over there, if you have meat of a calf or a young animal, which was less than a kibetza, and a kibetza is the minimum you need in order to be, in order for tumah. The Abba Machlokas were showing him actually whether food can become tumah in any amount and you need a kibetza to transmit tumah to something else, or is it that only a kibetza can become tumah? Whatever, that's Machlokas Rashi and Rambam in a number of places, but whatever. The point is, you definitely need a kibetza to make other food tumah. So let's say you have a piece of basar edel, of the meat of a calf, which was tameh, but then, so it was less than a kazayis, but then, or a kebes, I mean, but shenisfach, it expanded in size, and Rashi says, it's meat from a young animal, it often expands in size, like when you cook it or whatever, obsar's kena shenismayach, or the other way around, you have the meat of an old animal, which originally was more than a kebes, but then let's say you cooked it, and it shrank, as it often does. What do you do? Meshar and Lakamos Shehen, you evaluate them as they are right now. Meaning, in other words, after they shrank or expanded or whatever. Yeah. So in other words, in the first case, let's say if you have this original piece with less than a kibetza, but now after it expanded and cooking with a kibetza, then it's not okay. Then it will be able to transmit trauma to something else. And in the second case, they're not right. Okay. So now we have a machlokas. What's the actual wording of the Mishnah? The Mishnah, as we have it in front of us, says, well, Tomoy's Shehain, but is that the proper Girsa or not? Rav Rav Chia Rav Yechanan Ami, so Rav Rav Chia and Rav Yechanan all say that the Girsa is Misharim Kemoy's Shehain, that you go according to, how they are right now. So again, then it would mean, for example, the Basara Ego will be Tomei because you have a Kabeza. The Basara Tzkena won't be because it shrank below a Kabeza. On the other hand, Shmuel, Rav Shimon Bar Rebbe, Rav Shlokish Amri, Mishtarin L'Kemoyz Shehein, or Shehoyu, actually, that they say you go according to the original volume of it. They say that the Mishnah, they say the proper wording of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is not Kemoyz Shehein, but Kemoyz Shehoyu, as they were originally. No, that was their view. It's in the Mishnah. Remember, the Mishnah had been, according, you have Rashi in many places in Shas says that Rebbe didn't write the Mishnah, he only fixed the wording of it. There was still talk about that. The Rambam says it was written down, but even according to the Rambam, doesn't mean that everybody had copies of it. There still could have been different Girsos that were floating around. So you have three Amiroim on each side argue what the correct Girsa is. Are you going according to the current volume, or are you going according to the original volume? Okay. The Gemara says, Nasi, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, "Sar ha'egel shalahaya by kashir." If you have meat of a young calf that originally you had less than a shear, you had less than a kibetza, the tofach, and then it swelled up, the omad al kashir, and now it's the size of a kibetza, tahar l'sha'avar, it's tahar as up until this point. In other words, before it swelled up, it wasn't a kibetza, therefore it couldn't become tamei. According to Rashi, that you need a kibetza to become tamei. But the tummy mikana labba. From now on, if it becomes tummy, then it'll be able to make other things tummy. Now, Rish Lakish is saying you go according to the original volume. So according to Rish Lakish, why should it be tummy mikana labba? The original piece was less than a kibetza. So it swelled up. Big deal. According to Rish Lakish and the rest of the, and Shmuel and Shimon Bar Rebbe, that shouldn't matter. This is midrabanan. You could say that midrabanan were going to be mikana it. Midaraisa, you're right. They would say that you go according to the original volume, but we'll say midrabanan.
Any amount.
Yeah, well, not any amount. It still has to be a kibetza. It still has to be a kibetza. But midrabanan, we would say, if it was less than a kibetza, and now it's swelled up and becomes a kibetza, then we're going to apply the genome of Tumah V'Tahara there. Mefarshim say, a logical reason for that is because a person who observes isn't going to realize that originally it was less than a kibetza, and now it's swelled up. They're going to see that you have a kibetza of food, and you're not worried about Tumah V'Tahara, and they're not going to realize they're going to make a mistake in halacha. The question is, Yehochi, if you're going to say that, it's only Midrabanan, Eina Sefer. Look at the next part of the Braitha. The Braitha continues, V'chein b'pigul, v'chein b'noiter. The same rule applies as far as pigul and as far as noiter. Now, on the face of it, what does the Braitha mean? If you had a piece of the star eagle that was pigul, now in the case of pigul and noiter, the shear for a person to eat it in the Chayav Kodesh is a kazayis, not a kazayis. But same idea, in other words, the braita apparently for eating the sekazah. So in other words, on the face of it, what we're saying is if you had a piece of the star eagle from a carbon that was pigle or nicer, and it was less than a kazayis, now it swelled up and became a kazayis, and a person eats it, he's going to be chayav karet. What do you mean? If it's a midrabanon, bishleim iam, it's bishleim a daraisa. If you say this whole concept is daraisa, kind of the eagle pigle or nicer, then that makes sense. Pigle or nicer, requiring a daraisa level. Eli am a midrabanon, pigle or nicer, midrabanon be ikud. There's no such thing as pigle or nicer on a midrabanon level. You get, the Rabbanon can't impose Kori, or maybe there can be Tigal and Nosan at the Rabbanon level, but the Rabbanon can't impose Kori. So if we're saying that, if we're saying it's higher Kori, what does that mean, according to Rosh Lakish? Yes. We're not talking about the Easter and the Chir of Kores for eating Pigol or eating Noser. We're talking about Midrabbanon, that Rabbanon made a rule that Pigol and Noser make a person hand tummy. So even if the pigle or noser themselves never became tummy, they never touched any sort of tumah. A person touches pigle or noser, their hands become tummy. Rashi brings over here from a Gemara and Sachim, the reason is because of chashbei kahuna, because you have kohen and who are suspect of that they're gonna leave it past the time and then eat it or whatever. So therefore, to avoid that. Well, pigle, I think, is the same. Whatever. The point is, in other words, that the Mishum Ashtlai Kohona, Mishum Chashtlai Kohona, pigle, I think, is actually Chashtlai Kohona. That Kohona may be suspect to make it pigle. The Noser is Ashtlai Kohona, but Kohona may be lazy and leave it over. Whatever. The point is, Kohona are extremely careful with Tumah Vatara. So
therefore, we say they would have done that.
No, so that's the point. In other words, they may be lazy and leave it over. Like this one, that Abana made that person now touches it as it becomes Tomei, that's gonna induce them to pay attention and make sure not to allow it to become Noser, because they don't want it to become Tomei. Yeah. Okay. The point is, so again, that tumor is the Rabbanon. And why would the Braita have to tell us that? If the rule applies to the Rabbanon, why would we think it doesn't apply over here? Because like this, otherwise you might have thought, Hoyo v'tumas pigle v'tumas noses the Rabbanon. Given that if the Braita hadn't said this, if the Braita hadn't said the same pigle became a noser. No, the Braita just told us that this concept applies by the Rabbanon. But it hadn't spelled out that it also applies by pigle and noser, then we would think like this. Hoyo v'tumas pigle v'tumas noser did abonim. Since this whole tumor of pigle and noser that's metame a person's hand is anyway only did abonim, kula hai did abonim like over did abonim, maybe the abonim don't impose the xeder going that far to say even a piece that was less than a kazayas or base or whatever and swelled up and became that sheer that now it's going to be metame your hand, you would think not. Kamash Malon, that's the chiddush of the Braita, that even then they did that. So again, this is all only according to Rabbi Yochanan, not Rabbi Yochanan, according to Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon Berebi and Rish Lakish. According to the other three Amiroi, according to Rabbi Pri and Rabbi Yochanan, you don't need that. You could say the Braita is talking about Tumana Daraisa level. Because according to them, this concept that when it swells up, it's Matame, they hold that you go according to what it is now, on a Daraisa level. See? Toshma, come, let's prove from another braisa. The saris kena shahoya by kashir, the other way around, you had meat from an old animal that shrank, that originally had a shear, it had a kazayas or a kabeta, as the case may be, but samach pochot mikashir, and it shrank and became less than the shear, less than a kabeta. Again, tomei l'shomar, for anything up until now is tomei, in other words, if it touched the source of tumma, then it was tomei, and it was able to transmit tumma to other things. Mikano labba, the Torah, Mikano Abba, but it's Torah from now on, if it touches any other food, that other food is not going to become tummy, because it's shrank. So again, according to, if you say that you go according to the original shear, which is what Shmuel and company are saying, then you have a problem. Then why should it not be Mitami Mikano Abba? Originally it was a Kabeta. So the answer is Omer Rabba. So Rabba says the answer is like this. Kol Hecha de Meikra Havabe, Behashla Lesbe, if originally it had a shear, and now it's shrank and it's smaller than the shear, then the fact is, even Shmuel and company are going to agree. The fact is, it's not the size anymore. It's not the size of a kabeta. Therefore, we're not going to apply any dinim d'rabanan to it. Again, if the reason for the din d'rabanan is we don't want people to get confused and see you have a kabeta of food over there, and you're not worrying about tumah v'tahara, and they're going to think tumah v'tahara doesn't apply to a kabeta. Here, we're shrank. There's no reason to make that clear. If it's the other way around, originally it didn't have a shear, and now it does, midrabanan, and then Shmuel, and Reb Shimon Berebi, and Mishlokish will say that the din midrabanan applies. He, Tligin, halav, the only machloikis would be like this. Kagan shahoya by kashir, suppose you're talking about, you started out with a piece that
the
was,
both would agree on what we
what we said is like this. Everybody would agree that if it shrank, then tumah doesn't apply to it anymore. Rabbi Yochanan and company would say that it doesn't apply because you go according to the current size and now it's less than a kebetza. And Shmuel and company would say, and Rish Lakish and company would say it doesn't apply because there's no reason to make the gzeira. If it expanded, then both of them are going to say it's coming. Rabbi Yochanan and company are going to say deraisa. Rish Lakish and company are going to say derabah. The machloikus would be, suppose the piece was a full kebetza in size, with somach, then it shrank, and then it expanded again. Rashi says, when we mentioned earlier, we said the meat of the calf that expanded, we mean that originally it was the size, then it shrank, and now it expanded again. And when we say the meat of the old one that shrank, we mean we're talking about the middle of the process. It shrank, and then it later on expanded. The point is, the Mar Sover Yesh Dichli B'Isura, so of the two opinions, Rabbi Yochanan and company, Rish Lakish and company are going to say, Yesh Dichli B'Isura, once it was pushed away from having Isur applied to it, because it was less than a kebetza, then it doesn't regain that status. Sort of like we said, Dichli, when it comes to Kodshim, and other things that are used for mitzvahs, they will hold a similar concept applied to Tumah. Dichli b'isura, that's the same thing. In other words, that once it was nidche, it was pushed off from having isurim of tumah applied to it, because less than a kebetza. So even though it expanded now, it doesn't come back. So therefore on a deraisa level, one doesn't come back. On a derabanan level, fine. We're going to say derabanan. We don't want people to get mixed up. Or Mar Sava, whereas Rabbi Yochanan and company hold, ein dichui b'isura, there's no dichui, so therefore it was temporarily not pushed away from being tamei, but now it's back to being kazayis, therefore the original din daraisa applies to it again. Okay. The Gemara asks, me ikal manda omer, do yesh dichui b'isura? Okay, but if you're going to explain the machloikas that way, is there really any opinion that says that when it comes to isur, there's such a thing as dichui, that we say that once it was pushed off, then the tumah never comes back to it? Well, it's none. But we learn in another Mishnah, in the Masechta Taharos, which is also a Masechta that talks about tumah of food, kebetza oichlen sheinichan b'chama, if you have a kebetza of food, like we're talking about over here, you left it out in the sun, v'nitzmasu, and it shrank. No, it depends what kind of food it is. If the water in it evaporates, then it shrinks, right? Yeah. V'chen kezayis menamnet, kezayis menanavela. The same thing if you have a kezayis of a dead body, or a kezayis of a human, that is, or a kezayis of a dead body of an animal, which are metame. V'chadosha menasheret, so a lentil-sized piece of a sheret, which is also metame. Or kezayis pigle, or kezayis noiser, or kezayis chelev, or a kezayis pigle, or noiser, or chelev, tahorin, all of those things, if they were left out in the sun and they shrank, they're tar, the ein chayovan alem shum pigul v'noisa v'chelev. And if a person eats that pigul or noisa v'chelev, which is now less than a kezayis in size, then they don't have the isur kares on it. No, this is a Mishnah saying this. None of these Amoraim can argue with a Mishnah. He nichan v'chomim v'chofu, then the Mishnah continues, if you left them out in the sun, in the rain, and they expanded again because they absorbed moisture, So therefore, two of the Lamanda Omer Yesh Dichui Beisurim. So this seems to be a clear contradiction against the opinion that says that there's Dichui. Because the Mishnah is clearly saying that they're Tomei, and that the Isur Daraisa applies to them. Again, a Pigol and Noiser and Chelet. Okay, Tiyukta, that is indeed a contradiction, so that's it. We can't accept that there's such an opinion, Yesh Dichui Beisurim. So we still can use Rabba's explanation. We still can use parts of Rabba's explanation that the machlokas between them can still be if it was smaller and then it expanded. Whether now it's Tomei Daraisa or Rabbanan, rather the shrinking, expanding, shrinking. We're saying based on that Mishnah from Taharos that we just quoted, everybody would have to agree that it's Tomei. Yeah. Tashma, the Gemara says, come, let's bring another proof from another case. About this question of if something shrinks or expands, what happens to it? So, a Mishnah says like this. Termin, is that not a Mishnah, actually, it's a Braisa. Braisa and the Sechta Truma.
Where do you see the Braisa?
Because you can see in the Sechta Shas, Tesefta Truma, there's that a lot of it. Now, we know you have to take Truma from produce.
Right.
you have, in particular, one type of produce that you have to take shrimp from is figs. Now, figs you can have in those times could be eaten in one of two ways. You could eat them fresh, or you could dry it, which is then called te'enim, or you could dry them, and then they're good for long-term storage, and they're called groigers. Well, I mean, nowadays, it's more common you buy them fresh and more or less fresh in the store, but yeah, right. Okay. It would be like grapes and raisins. It would be the equivalent of grapes and raisins, yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, you get those fresh figs. It's like the very low.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Okay.
Like, you know, the little round
packages. Yeah, okay.
Okay,
I know. So it's grapes, so say, but okay, whatever. Fine. Okay. Maybe. Okay. The Braita says, Termin to animal a grogers dominion. When it comes to taking truma, you can take truma from fresh figs on behalf of dried figs. Now remember, the dried figs are shrank in size. Gregorius are the dried ones. Dominion, based on number. Meaning, in other words, so we're talking about truma, and Rashi says that the assumption in the Gemara is we don't just mean truma, we mean meiser. So meiser is 10%. Meaning, in other words, if you have a hundred figs, some fresh and some dry. Now, ideally, you're supposed to take truma and meiser from the better thing. The fresh ones are the better thing. Therefore, you're going to take truma from the fresh ones on behalf of the whole mixture, which includes dry ones, which means if you have 100 of them, you're going to take 10 of them out as meiser. But you're taking them out by number. You're taking 10 out of 100, even though when you get that, if you're either going to measure them by volume, the fresh ones have more volume per unit than the dry ones. So if you say you go according to how they were originally, so the dried ones originally were fresh ones also, shopping, well then this works out nicely. Even though now the dry ones are dried and shrunk, nevertheless originally they were the same size as the fresh ones. Therefore you're taking the exact amount of meiser that you're supposed to take. So according to the Schlockish and Company, you're good. But if you say you go according to how they are now these fresh ones have more volume than the equivalent number of dry ones.
More?
Yeah, because they're fresh, because they still have juice in them. They still have liquid in them. So they're larger. The problem is, then what it comes out is you've given more meiser than you're supposed to, and you can't do that. Meiser has to be given exactly 10%. Utsnan or Tanya, it's the 10% of the, no, 10% of the volume. Well, that's on the face of it. If we're saying you go according to the current volume, then you have to go according to the current volume. You should have to weigh the total mixture, and then take 10% of that weight. And instead we're saying not to do that. The point is we're not doing that. Utsnan or Tanya, we learn in a Braita, if somebody gives extra meiser, pay roys of matrikonin. Okay, so the rest of the pile of fruit is taken care of now. Meiser has been properly taken from. He can eat the rest of it. Umas roys of matrikonin. But the actual meiser itself is messed up because now you have tevel and meiser mixed in that piece. Rashi says like this. Let's say, for example, umas roys of matrikonin. The meiser is messed up. Because what it is like this: you're giving meiser only on behalf of you're taking out meiser on behalf of the whole pile. But let's say, for example, so you have, Rashi gives an example. Let's say you have a pile containing 5 cabs. But now meiser should consist of half a cab, which is 1/10 of the total. Instead, let's say the person takes out a whole cab. What happens? So what happens? Out of that one cab, half of it is meiser, and the other half of it is still tevel, because you haven't taken meiser on behalf of that other half. So therefore, you have a problem. So you can't do that. So then, apparently, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Company, you shouldn't be able to do that. You shouldn't be able to take out 10 fresh figs on behalf of the 90 dry figs. You should have to measure them by weight or by volume, not just by number. Okay, so the Gemara says, Elamai with Moshein. Okay, so what are you going to tell me then? That evidently that Mishnah supports the position of Rish Lakish and Company, that you go according to how they were previously. However, Ema Sefer, but look at the next part of the Braita. Grogeres Alatein in the Middah. If you're giving Meister from the dried ones on behalf of the fresh ones, you're not supposed to do that, because you're supposed to give the better stuff. But nevertheless, you can, B'di'evet, give from the lesser quality stuff on behalf of the whole thing. But let's say you do the other way. Let's say you're doing the other way around. You separate, and sometimes you can do it achilah. Let's say, for example, if there's no kohen nearby and you separate out fresh figs for him, they're going to spoil by the time a kohen shows up. Then you're allowed to take from Groger. Okay, the point is, you can have a case where a person takes meiser out from Groger on behalf of fresh ones. The midah that you do based on measurement. And there the reason is, because you can't do it based on number, because you can't do it based on number, because then you're giving too little meiser. So again, I'm at the shleimah. You have to weigh them, for example. You weigh them, you weigh them and you take 1/10 of the weight, or you figure out the volume and you give 1/10 of the volume, whatever the point is. I'm at the shleimah kamoris shehein. So now it's the other way around. If you stay according, you go according to how they are now, shafir, then good. Then in that case, you're going according to how they are now. We don't care that these grogers originally were larger. So therefore you're good. Eliyamat l'kamos shehein. But if you're going to say you're supposed to go according to the original volume, you have the same problem as before. Mava meiser too. Same problem as before. You're giving too much meiser, and now your meiser is going to be messed up because there's pebble mix in the thing. So that part of the brisa seems to work better according to the Yechman's position. So you have a contradiction within the brisa. The first part of the brisa seems to support Rish Lakish's position. You're giving 10 fresh figs on behalf of 90 dried ones. We don't care that the dried ones original. We say the dried ones were originally fresh. Therefore, originally this represents 10% of the volume. The fact that now it represents more than 10% of the volume is no good. We don't care. Rabbi Yochanan would seem to have a problem with that. But the second part of the brisa that says the other way around, when it comes to meditation from Groger, you go according to their current weight or their current volume, that works according to Rish Lakish. That works according to Rabbi Yochanan. That doesn't work according to Rish Lakish. According to Rish Lakish, you should be going according to the original volume. So you have a contradiction. So the answer is, we can't say that this brisa is talking about meister at all. Rather, we're talking about trumah gdolah. Now, the difference is, trumah, unlike meiser, where you have to take an exact amount, 10%, no more, no less, and if you take too much, then like we said, you have tevel mixed in with your meiser, trumah isn't like that.
Trumah,
the Torah actually doesn't give a shear. Midaraisa, you can give even a tiny amount, one grain of wheat for an entire stack. The Rabbanon set up rules, that Rabbanon said a generous person gives 1/40th, an average person gives 1/50th, a stingy person gives 1/60th, but there's no, it doesn't have to be measured exactly.
Truma is the first one.
The order is, yes, Truma Gdola is the first one, about 2%. Truma Gdola, is about, again, 1/40th, 1/50th, or 1/60th, so around 2%, give or take. 2%. Go for the coin. Can you take 10% of what's left, that's my solution, and give it to the lady? Out of that, the lady takes 1/10 of that and gives it to the kohen.
That's Trumah Meiser.
Then you take out another, the lady takes and gives it to the kohen. And then you have another 10% of what you have left, which at this point is about 9%. You take, and you do either Meiser Sheni or Meiser Oni, depending on what you are.
2% of the initial self-pile goes to the kohen.
A little less than 10% goes to the 9.8%, yeah, goes to the lady. Out of that, 1/10 of that, so a little less than 1% of the total, goes to the kohen also. And then of the rest, you take another 8.8 or whatever it is percent and use it as Meiser Sheni or Meiser Oni, depending on you.
I think we're ready for the final.
Okay, the point is that our Braisa is not talking about Meiser at all. It's talking about Truma. Truma doesn't have to be an exact amount. You give a little bit more, a little bit less. Plain Truma. Regular Truma. Truma Gdola. Does not have to be a fixed amount.
The Trumas Meister is something that we didn't talk about yet.
We haven't gotten into it, but that's the thing we're going to get into too.
The
Reisha Ba'ayin Yofa, the Sefer Ba'ayin Yofa. So therefore, what the Mishnah is telling us is the best way to do it in the most generous possible way in both cases. If you're using Quesh figs as your Truma, better you should give them by number. It's going to be a little bit more than 2%. Doesn't matter. By all means, you can give more than 2% of Truma. Yeah. Even so, therefore, it works for both ways.
2 ±
Right. And the second way, when it comes to groigerus, if you're giving from groigerus, you should give by weight. That's also buying you up. So this way, you'll be giving him more figs, so they shrink. So that's what the brisa is talking about. The reisha buying you up, the sefer buying you up. Both the reisha and the sefer are talking about truma, which should be given in the most generous possible way.
How much is the truma
can you give? Well, you can give even more. I mean, I don't think specifically there is a maximum. I think actually it talks about it in Truma, so I don't remember. I think the halacha is that there's really no maximum limit as long as you leave some for yourself. There has to be ratios, shashireh, and the card, and there has to be some part left over. But in practice, I mean, you're not going to get that much. But I don't remember, actually, if that's the halakha. I don't remember if there's a maximum amount. Whatever it is, you can definitely give a little more than 2%, because ayin yafer, you can give 2.5%, 1/40. Yeah. So in that case, there's wiggle room over there. So therefore, both according to the Shlokish and according to the Yechanan, it's not an issue where you go according to the original volume or you go according to the current volume. You're giving fresh figs you can give by number, so that way you're giving a more generous amount to the Kohen. You're giving from dried figs you can give by weight. So again, that way you're giving a more generous amount to the Kohen. Nothing to do with the question whether you go
by numbers, dry
and dry is by volume. So nothing to do with the question whether you go according to the original or whether you go according to how it is now. So the question then is, Ihochi Emasei. So okay, but if you're going to understand it that way, what about the next part of the Braisa? If you're saying that so much Shuma, Amar Rav Elazar Rav Yosi, Abba, my father Rav Yosi, Hoya Noto Eser Groigus Shem Miksoya, he would take 10 dried figs from the Miksoya, which is a keli where they put the dried figs. He would take 10, Altishim Shem Kakala, on behalf of 90 that are left in the basket. Now, Truma is not 10 to 90. The Ibis Truma Gdola, Esther Maya Bidze. If it's a Truma Gdola, what are you talking about? 10. You're talking about 2. You're talking about 2, 2 and a half, whatever. Where are you getting 10 from? On the face of it, the Braitha must be talking about Truma. And then we're back to our question. That one part of the Braitha works according to the Shlokish, and the other part works according to the Yeshma. So we'll break over here.
On the face of it, you cannot talk about...
Well, on the face of it, it can't be talking about Truma, because Truma is 2% given. Because if Rav Elazar Rav Yosi is giving us, we thought we have to be talking about Truma, but if Rav Elazar Rav Yosi is telling us 10%, that implies nicer.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, that's to be continued.